This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's the 26th of November 2009 here in Japan, and today I am talking once again with Mike Adams, the health ranger from naturalnews.com, an excellent source of information on health and planetary wellness issues. And Mike Adams, thank you for joining me once again today.
My pleasure to be with you. How are things going for you there in Japan?
Things are going pretty good. Of course, Natural News is a website that I often quote from in my articles and podcasts. So I just want to tip my hat to everything that you're doing over there. It's a site that I rely on for trustworthy information that cuts through the spin and propaganda of the FDA and all of the pharmaceutical industrial pimps and the also the other side as well, the snake oil and the spin that unfortunately you sometimes get in the alternative media. And
sure.
I think it's important for people to have some discernment in that area as well. So I think Natural News is good on both ends of that spectrum. So when I heard there was a developing H1N1 mutant strain in the Ukraine, I turned to the Natural News as one of my sources for finding out more about it. And you had a very interesting article on your site called H1N1 Superflu Plague in Ukraine Sparks Concern, Conspiracy Theories About Origins. Tell us about that article and the information it covers.
Well, I got curious about this too, as you did, and I started to investigate it. And, you know, I'm an investigative reporter like you, and so I look for the facts and I report on what I can find. And when it came to this issue of the super flu in the Ukraine, I really couldn't find any reliable facts that pointed to this definitely being a conspiracy or being caused by aerial spraying of chemtrails, for example, even though those were some of the theories that were out there. And some people were talking about that as being factual, like, we know this is the cause, or it has to be the cause. Well, I couldn't really find anything to support that. So I published an article stating what I couldn't find and just saying, at this point, we have a lot of questions, and it's certainly possible that this was done by aerial spraying. You know, it's possible it's a bioweapon. It's possible it was engineered by man, but we can't prove it. And until we can really have stronger evidence to support it, I'm not going to go on the record and say, yeah, that's exactly what's happening. So it was just an article of caution. And some people like that, some people don't, but that's the approach that I take.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly with your assessment there, and you're certainly right. This has generated a lot of questions and sort of online activity because there has been such a deafening silence on the issue in the controlled corporate media. So
sure.
Have you heard any updates or new information on this story since that original article on the 16th?
Just updates on the number of people sick, the number of hospitalized, which is close to 100,000 now. About 400 have died from it. But, you know, if you really look at these numbers, the number of people infected, which is over 1.5 million, and the number dead, 400, I mean, that's not a very high fatality rate. If this is a super flu, you know, high-powered plague, it's not very dangerous. And that point hasn't seemed to have penetrated the consciousness of many people who are writing about this. I mean, just do the math on it. It doesn't have a high fatality rate, and I'm certain from everything else that I've studied, that most of the people in the Ukraine who are being infected with this are vitamin D deficient. So they have suppressed immune systems. If I had the time, I'd be happy to go travel to the Ukraine, walk right through the hospitals. I'd lick the doorknobs. I'm not afraid of it because I have plenty of vitamin D and I have an immune system that's functioning. So it doesn't concern me.
Well, that's an excellent point, and in fact, that's something I want to get into. But maybe we'll get a little bit more into some of the natural cures that people can use a little bit later on. But just going back to that article, of course, there are unsubstantiated theories that this may have been a bioweapon release and unconfirmed reports, as you say, of aerial spraying and taking place at the beginning of the outbreak. But as you state in the article, it's unconfirmed reports and only speculation. But the larger issue here, I think, is that regardless of whether or not this particular strain of flu was a bioweapon release, there are still many people out there who don't really fully appreciate that there are such things as bioweapons and that there is a very long history of biowarfare. So, Mike Adams, you have the floor. I know you've done voluminous amounts of research on this topic and written on it extensively. So how would you start broaching this subject with someone who may not be familiar with it?
Well, I'd start by first, for those who may not be familiar with my background, just so they don't think that I'm just coming in and being skeptical. you know, I've written about 9/11, and I'm convinced that 9/11 was in some way an inside job, for example. I've written about the Federal Reserve and the scam of the money supply. You know, I cover the scams of the FDA and the FTC and the pharmaceutical industry. So I am known for actually exposing conspiracies. And so I bring a lot of, I think, street cred to the table when looking at any issue. I don't claim to be an expert on this Ukrainian flu or even bioweapons in particular. You know, guys like Dr. Len Horowitz are far more knowledgeable about the specifics. But what I am good at is sort of looking at the big picture and seeing how the pieces of the puzzle fit together in a very independent mindset kind of way, where I'm not swayed easily by the mainstream media or the lies of politicians, you know, areas of information like that. So when it comes to bioweapons, to answer your question, the biggest thing that comes to mind is the cover-up that has gone on for decades about the degree of bioweapons development that has taken place not only in the United States, but throughout the world, and the very real possibility that many of these weaponized viruses, or in some cases maybe even bacteria, have either inadvertently escaped these biohazard facilities or have been sold off as bioweapons to certain groups that could then use them against us or may have already used them against us. For example, I think there's a very distinct possibility that the first spread of the AH1N1 swine flu vaccine could have been released by a military contractor operating near the U.S.-Mexico border. I don't have proof of it, but I think that's a very distinct possibility.
Excellent. Well, that is all very key information. So let's go back in time a little bit and talk about some of the history of bioweapons that, as you say, it's been unfolding for decades, at least in its modern incarnation. And of course, people think that there are international treaties and things against using biological agents in warfare. But of course, there are ways to subvert that and get around that in terms of developing new bioweapons. So let's talk about that issue a little bit.
Well, if you go back to the origins of bioweapons, it takes you back to the same place as the origins of the pharmaceutical industry, which is, of course, Nazi Germany and IG Farben. And if you look back in the late 1930s and the early 1940s, the Nazi regime was very heavily invested in experimentation on human prisoners. This is well documented, by the way. This isn't just theory. This is well documented. And in fact, the Bayer Corporation, or what eventually became the Bayer Corporation, was involved in some of those experimentations that were taking place on human prisoners in Nazi concentration camps. Now, after World War II, when many of the Nazi leaders were then taken to trial and prosecuted for their war crimes, IG Farben was broken up into three different pharmaceutical companies, or three different chemical companies, one of those being Bayer. And from that, we get all kinds of products that are used today. I don't mean to get off topic, but this is important. From the bioweapons research, we now have artificial food coloring chemicals. Those are petrochemical derivatives. We have pesticides, we have fertilizers, and we have pharmaceuticals. These all have a common origin, and that is Nazi Germany bioweapons development. And not very many people know that. I know you do, but some of your listeners may not have known that.
And it is very key information. It's important to understand the history of this and where it's coming from. And then, of course, we have the American bioweapons research, which, of course, took place over a period of decades under the guise of defensive research, because, of course, defensive and offensive research are basically the same thing. It's just planning on using it in warfare.
Yeah, you can make a justification for defensive weapons. In fact, it was the RAND Corporation, the think tank scientists at RAND, who came up with the concept of mutually assured destruction through nuclear weapons. And, you know, you could make a logical argument that this mutually assured destruction pursuit actually created safety or stability. I mean, you could argue that. Because if one side has all the nukes and the other side doesn't, that might end up causing more violence. Well, I'm not saying I totally agree with that. I'm just saying that's what is out there. But you can make the same argument with bioweapons. So undoubtedly, U.S. military intelligence personnel back in the 40s, after World War II was over, they were almost certainly, well, in fact, we know this is true, they were going to Washington and they were saying, we need funding to hire these ex-German bioweapons developers and ex-German special weapons developers, like the rocketry professionals, for example. We need to hire those people, otherwise they're going to go over to Russia and start working for, you know, that enemy at the time. So we ended up, after World War II, bringing a lot of scientists who then grandfathered much of the bioweapons development in America, which continues today in the military.
That's exactly right. Okay, well, let's start to get into some specifics then. So for example, we have things like bioterrorism, which, of course, people have been steeped in over the last several years in the fear-mongering that has gone on since 9/11. And, of course, the best example of that was the anthrax attacks of 2001. So what can you say about the idea of bioterrorism?
Well, smallpox remains a big concern. I've got a lot of physician friends, actually, and some of them are clued into this bioterrorism self preparedness kind of themes. And they've told me that they're clued into a lot of information that smallpox could be released as a bioweapon sometime in the future. Of course, there was sarin gas attacks in Japan, you know, several years ago in the subway there. That's more of a chemical attack, of course, not a bio attack. But there are people who remain concerned about a biological attack. But I think the biggest concern of the military industrial complex is that a future attack will end up using bioweapons that were developed in the U.S. So our own weapons will eventually be used against us.
Exactly as the anthrax in 2001 came from Fort Detrick.
Right. Right. Exactly. Precisely. And if you look at chemical attacks, nuclear attacks, and biological, you know, NBC, right? Nuclear, biological, chemical. You know, chemicals, very limited range, very acute symptoms, but fading very quickly for those who survive it. Biological is extremely dangerous if it can be engineered to be highly infectious, but not so highly fatal. This is a very important point that a lot of people miss. They think that a really dangerous biological weapon is something like Ebola, which is a class 4 viral infection. But it's not dangerous. It's not as dangerous as you might think, because it kills people too quickly to be carried and spread. So if you're a terrorist and you're thinking about ways to decimate a nation, which I guess is what terrorists think about, you don't want to use Ebola because it burns itself out too quickly. You want something like H1N1 swine flu, but with higher fatality rates. From the research that I've done, just in writing about this, it seems like the most deadly biological weapons have a fatality rate between about 2 and 6%. And they tend to have a long incubation period so that someone can carry that virus for as much as 6 weeks without being symptomatic. So it's the mild viruses that are the most deadly across the board, and that's what terrorists would be choosing if they were trying to cause a lot of damage.
Exactly. Okay, so now that we've raised the specter of bioweapons and the H1N1 recent outbreak, well then, for example, you mentioned that it's a logical possibility. We don't have any proof, but it's a possibility that, of course, the H1N1 that popped up in Mexico all of a sudden earlier this year could have been a bioweapons release. And as you say, it could have been the U.S. Army releasing that in Mexico. But I guess that raises the question, why would they do it so close to home at that point?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. And I actually think if that turns out to be true, I think it would actually be a military contractor, a private contractor, that would have been the one taking that action, not anyone actually in the military itself, because I don't think they would want those kinds of ties. But it brings up a lot of questions. Why would they want to do it? You know, what's the big agenda here? And to answer that question, you have to get into all kinds of conspiracy theories. Most of them come back to population control measures. You know, how do you solve global warming? Reduce the population by 80%. This is the thinking, reportedly, of you know, some of the Big Brother folks running the world. I'm not saying I subscribe to that specific theory, but it's out there. You're going to hear me repeat this a lot. I, you know, as an investigative journalist, I'm always looking at what's possible, and I'm I'm looking at the conspiracy theories and seeing which ones of those make sense too. And I think this is a possibility. But to answer your question, why they would release it so close to home, well, actually, remember the first outbreak was in Mexico City, right? I mean, that's where it really started to go crazy. It's close enough to America to hit America hard and help destroy America, because that seems to be one of the things on the agenda. But it's far enough away from America to blame it on some other country. So they can blame it on Mexico. They could blame it on Mexico's animal ranching practices, or, you know, swine factory farming practices. And that's exactly what you heard in the first few weeks of this initial outbreak.
That's right. That's right. And it would give them some sort of arm's length, logical, plausible deniability on that. Well, that's a good point. Well, let's bring up the specter of another conspiracy fact this time. One from a document from 2000 from the Project for a New American Century called Rebuilding America's Defenses, which is a pretty famous or infamous document in a number of ways. But one of the bone-chilling quotes from that document, which hardly ever gets noticed, is that in that document, the PNAC, which included Cheney and Jeb Bush and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and many other prominent neocons, that document actually calls for the use of race-specific bioweapons as a politically useful tool, which is one of the most bone-chilling quotes I've ever read in any official document ever. So let's bring up the specter of that. What is a race-specific bioweapon, and how could they possibly develop such a thing?
Well, in fact, I think it's already been developed, and I think H1N1 is a race-specific bioweapon, and here's why. The number one defense against influenza, almost any form, is vitamin D, very high levels of vitamin D circulating in your blood. And vitamin D deficiency is rampant across the U.S. population, but it's most severe in those who have dark skin pigmentation. And that's because dark skin acts as a natural UV sunblock, and it prevents your skin from generating vitamin D in response to sunlight exposure. So to say it bluntly, you know, people with white skin tend to have higher vitamin D levels. People with black skin or brown skin or dark skin have much worse vitamin D deficiency. So if you then release a bioweapon like that is, I'm sorry, if you release influenza into the population, then you know automatically, if you're aware of the correlation between vitamin D deficiency and fatalities from influenza, then you know that this weapon is going to kill far more black people or Hispanics or Latinos than white people. And so you could argue that this right now is a race-specific bioweapon just because of the way it interacts with vitamin D. But there are other ways, of course, to genetically engineer even more specific race-targeted bioweapons, and, you know, that's probably another question.
Yeah, I suppose it is, but the answer you just gave there is in itself very, very chilling. And it's something that I hadn't ever thought of in that way before. But so you're saying that influenza generally affects darker skin pigments more harshly than it would a whiter skin pigment?
Well, only because people with darker skin pigmentation who work indoors or who live in northern latitudes like the United States or Canada,
right,
tend to be extremely deficient in vitamin D. In Boston, for example, right now, 75% of the African-American babies being born are deficient. They're born deficient in vitamin D. Rickets is a disease of vitamin D deficiency. It's coming back throughout North America. The cancer industry, here's another conspiracy, that's true. The cancer industry preys upon the victimization of black women with breast cancer because they know that that breast cancer is practically incurable as long as that woman remains vitamin D deficient. And because they have black skin, they remain deficient, and no one is telling them, take some vitamin D and save your life.
That's right. That is right. There were reports that came out a couple of years ago about how the black female community was contracting breast cancer at a much higher rate than other populations, and there was much head scratching going on. But basically, there is a very logical, very obvious explanation for it. Then,
Oh, absolutely. It's not only black women have far more aggressive and more fatal breast cancer, but black men have far more aggressive prostate cancer. And the cancer industry is absolutely silent about this. So if you extrapolate that to the vaccine industry, which is closely tied to this whole influenza situation, of course, then you begin to get the mindset that, wow, these chemical companies really don't value human life. And they would do anything if they could make more money as a result. That begins to open up a lot of doors of possibilities of what kinds of things they might be into, such as, for example, intentionally releasing swine flu.
Right. Well, okay. Well, this does bring up, I guess the logical question is, what can people do to help protect themselves against these types of weapons? And it sounds like vitamin D might be one good place to start.
Yeah, vitamin D is, it's now being called nature's antibiotic as well. It's the number one thing that you can do to protect yourself against almost any biological weapon. Of course, if there's something like Ebola that's released, that's a class 4 biohazard, forget it. You know, if you're in that area, you're probably not going to make it no matter what kind of nutrients you have. But for something that is spread throughout the population, by definition, it can't be very fatal. Otherwise, it would not spread. For something that's spreading, vitamin D is your best defense. On top of that, control your body weight, because obesity is also a strong factor with the fatality rates of influenza, of H1N1 right now, and asthma as well. Any kind of inflammatory diseases or conditions tend to reduce your chances of surviving exposure to these flus. Now, on the chemical weapon side, of course, nutrition doesn't really make much difference. But a chemical weapon has such a limited range that, you know, your odds of being killed by a chemical weapon in North America are virtually nothing. You're more likely to be struck by lightning than to find yourself in a chemical weapons attack. It's the biological attacks that are more likely to impact you on a personal level.
That's right. So vitamin D and anything else that you have for your bioweapon preparedness kit.
Oh yeah. Well, all the antiviral herbs out there, many of them. I don't know if you want me to mention brand names or company names, but many of the antiviral herbs are very, very powerful, and there are many reputable companies out there offering them. Is it okay if I mention a name or two?
If you want to recommend, that's fine. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I don't have any ties with these companies, but John Barron's company, Baseline Nutritionals, has a Super Viragon product. There are products sold by Vitacost that are antivirals. There's you can just go out and grow your own garlic and ginger and take that olive leaf extract. It's super powerful against viruses. But I'm telling you, nothing works as well as vitamin D, because vitamin D not only protects you from the infection itself, it also helps to regulate your immune system once you are exposed to avoid your immune overreaction. It's the overreaction, what's called the cytokine storm, that ends up killing people who are exposed to H1N1. So vitamin D helps balance that, keeps you breathing, keeps you alive. And it's, if it were a pharmaceutical, they would call it the most miraculous medicine ever invented in all of world history. But, you know, they didn't invent it, so they don't talk about it.
Exactly right. So what are the best natural sources of vitamin D?
Well, sunlight is number one source. If you can't get sunlight, then you can get it from fish oils. There are many good fish oil companies out there, Carlson Labs, for example. I'm trying to think of all the fish oil names. Fish oil supplements, vitamin D3 is the form that you want to get. You can get a lot of the products that contain omega-3 oils may also contain some vitamin D3 from fish. It's good to get it from wild harvested fish from a reputable source rather than farmed fish, because farmed fish tends to be a lot more contaminated with certain chemicals. So you probably don't want me to go into too much detail on all this, but, you know, fish oils and sunlight are basically the good sources.
All right. Well, out here in Japan right now, it's basically dark when I get up in the morning and dark when I come home at night. So I think fish oil is the way to go, but it's a good thing I live in a very fish-oriented culture. All right.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, in fact, where you live also, you know, the seaweed itself is very anti-cancer. It's also anti-inflammatory. So I don't know if you enjoy the Japanese cuisine like the locals there do, but they eat a lot of seaweed, and so they're getting all these anti-cancer phytonutrients from the ocean. It's very healthy.
That's right. I love Japanese food, and it's a good thing too, I think, because they are one of the longest lived people on the planet, so they must be doing something right in some way. So absolutely. Well, just a ton of information. And let's see if we can draw this to some type of conclusion, which I know is kind of difficult on a subject this vast. But I guess, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave people with on the subject of biowarfare or anything that we've touched on today?
Sure. Big thought is don't bet your life on your government protecting you from bioweapons or biowarfare. Take charge of your own safety, your own preparedness, your own health. And you greatly increase your odds of surviving any such attack, even if you are exposed to it. I think the people who become victims of any of such attacks, especially, let's say, a low-grade but highly infectious viral disease, the victims of that are going to be people who don't take responsibility for their own health, and instead they're in line waiting for a vaccine, or they're waiting for the National Guard to bring them something, or they're waiting in line at a hospital for a hospital bed. You know, if you depend on the government infrastructure or the medical infrastructure, then I think you're making a big mistake. Protect yourself, inform yourself, and you can survive almost anything that might be headed our way.
I couldn't have said it better myself. That's an absolutely essential point. Okay, so in conclusion, let's just tell people about naturalnews.com and some of the things that you offer there.
Well, naturalnews.com, thank you. It's over 25,000 articles on there right now. We publish about 10 a day. It's an independent news source. We have no ties to any mainstream media. It's pretty obvious once you start reading it. And we have a free email newsletter, and we cover the hard-hitting health stories with a very independent mindset. And, you know, I don't know, some people say it's the most independent-minded source of news that they've ever read. Sometimes it's a little opinionated, but I think, you know, real news should be, sometimes you should tell people what you think. You shouldn't just try to make it all dry and sanitary. It should be real, authentic, and based on actual human experience.
Well, there's no doubt that that's what's on offer at Natural News. And as I say, it's one of the sources that I turn to in times of health issues or things like that, and on a wide range of issues, not just health related, although, of course, the Health Ranger, you're quite well known for that as well. All right. Well, Mike Adams, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And once again, hats off to everything you're doing over there.
Well, you too, James. Thank you for the interview today, and I wish you well. Happy to come back and talk with you in the future.